This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
September 11, 2001, a day that changed the world. Well, we all know that. But for Janelle Guzman-McMillan, it really did change her whole life. A September 11 survivor, Janelle was the very last person to be pulled from the World Trade Center alive. And her book is told in the, her story is told in the book Angel in the Rubble. Thanks so much for your time today, Janelle.
Oh, thank you for having me, Catherine.
I hope that we're giving you some nice weather in Australia, are we? Or has it just rained the whole time you've been here?
Oh, yeah. It's been good. It's been good so far.
Okay. Well, before September 11, I guess you're just an ordinary person working an ordinary job. What was a typical day like for you?
It was a typical day for me, you know, just the mood was right. I was just heading out to work that morning. I made it to the 64th floor, and everything was going pretty well. Set up my computer, talking with my coworker, and, you know, within minutes within my conversation, that's when, you know, everything went bizarre. The building shook.
Yeah, tell us about that first moment when that impact was made. What was it like?
Well, when I felt that impact, that shake, I thought it was an earthquake because I had experienced an earthquake before. I looked at my friend, my coworker sitting there. I was sitting and she was standing. I'm like, oh my God, what was that? And when it stopped, I just got up and walked towards the window and realized all the bits of paper is all in the sky. And I'm thinking, okay. It was an earthquake. Something probably got blown open up on the higher floors that blew the window open, and that's why all the bits of paper were floating around in the sky. I didn't think of anything else to explain it more than an earthquake.
And you didn't really get the sense that this was a major disaster, did you?
Oh, no, not at all. And I didn't, because for the mere fact that the emergency lighting didn't come on, and there was no alarm, you know, saying to us to leave or evacuate the building. So nothing like that gave us indication to leave. So I thought, you know, it wasn't nothing that major until, you know, numerous phone calls going back and forth. That's when I find out what was really going on.
Yeah, and you were actually about to leave the first time when you got some official advice saying, just sit tight, stay where you are, help will come to you. Looking back, how do you cope with the fact that that person got it so wrong?
Well, yeah, this is exactly, you know, my thinking is like, why would they tell us to stay back? You know, why would they tell us to wait when we're making the phone call on the inside and you are on the outside looking in? Why wouldn't that be a catastrophe, you know, when they saw it from the outside?
Yes.
So it was totally wrong, really mixed messages, and I just couldn't understand why they told us to stay put if it was that magnitude on the outside looking in. And I just didn't understand that, but we stayed waiting, and it was too late then.
And really, none of you knew, I guess, how serious it was until you actually saw the TV news, didn't you? You found a boardroom or a conference room or something.
Yeah. Actually, after making so much phone calls, trying to figure out, you know, calling friends, calling family, you know, one person said that they think somebody's saying that a plane hit the building, and, you know, and then I thought it was a small airplane, but actually after numerous phone calls, we decided to go into the conference room. Somebody screamed out, and we went into the conference room, and there it was, the reporting of possibly a terrorist attack, that a plane that hit the other World Trade Center building, and that's when we knew something was definitely wrong.
And then you sort of made the decision to leave.
Yeah.
But you're on the 64th floor. It's a long way, isn't it, to get down?
Oh, yeah, it's a long way when you're in, you know, wearing a 4-inch heel shoes, you know. It's a long way to climb down the stairs. And, you know, but at that point, we just knew we had to get out, and we decided to take the staircase. It was all lit up, and we decided to go out.
And you were in the stairwell, and you were actually getting quite close to the ground. It must have taken a long time to go down those 50 floors or so when the building actually collapsed. What do you remember about that moment?
I remember that moment so closely. You know, I remember going down. We were counting each staircase as we descend down. I remember seeing the firemen coming up and we going down, telling us, you know, just to be careful. And at that point, when I made it to the 13th staircase and I stopped to take my shoes off, That's when the building just collapsed, the walls caving, and I remember it. I remember it hitting me to the floor. I remember Rosa pulling away and running back up to the staircase. It happened so fast that I thought I was dreaming. I thought it was a dream, but I just stood there until it come to a complete stop, and I realized that it was actually happening.
Yeah, I can't imagine the sound. It must have been so loud.
Oh, the sound was horrifying. It was deafening. It was like thunder, earthquake, everything all together, just rumbling, coming down, and the dusk falling, and the darkness. It was just
terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the book, you say that initially you actually wondered if you might be dead.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was dreaming. I thought, okay, this is a bad dream. I'm just going to wake up out of this bad dream. And, you know, at one point, I just thought, I'm going to die. I'm dead, you know. And I just stood there.
Yeah. And were you in pain?
Oh, I was in tremendous pain. My head being pinned between the concrete pillar. Couldn't understand how I got in that position. My legs crisscrossed. My hand was under my stomach, and the concrete and everything was just sticking me in my stomach. And I was all crumbling in a weird position. From the time that I knew how I fell to the floor, I ended up in such a weird position. And my head was just feeling like it was wanting to explode. I was in really pain at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you've just been squashed by, you know, hundreds of floors of building and you're trapped there. Mm-hmm. What is happening to you in that time? You were trapped for, I think it was about 27 hours.
Yeah.
Emotionally and spiritually, what was going on?
Emotionally, it's a lot of emotion came over me in terms of knowing that I was going to die and the building actually collapsed. It's real. This is happening. And no one is going to find me. I'm going to see myself slowly dying under here. And my family's not going to find my body. You know, everything just come right before me. My daughter, Kimberly, being back home in Trinidad at that time, 12 years old, you know, and how she's going to live without me. Roger being outside waiting for me to come out of the building.
Roger being your boyfriend at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, he was my boyfriend at the time. And he was outside waiting for me to come out. And, you know, just everything just flashed right before me. My mom telling me, you know, convincing me to live this faithful life, you know, to find God and everything. Everything just come right before my eyes. And, you know, spiritually, I wasn't spiritually religious before. I just say my prayer. Wouldn't even say my prayer. I just call out to God when I really need something. I always have a motive for wanting something, you know. So that's the only time that I really pray about something when I want it. And, you know, at that point, knowing that I can't move, I can't do nothing, and all my life just right before my eyes here, knowing that I'm going to die, I shut my eyes and realized that I'm still living, I'm still breathing. I just started to beg, not even pray. I decided to beg and ask God that for a second chance. I wanted to live. I wanted to see my daughter. And I just started to plead and promise, to make promise to God and just try to hold on and, you know, just beg for that second chance to live.
Yeah, you kind of went through, I mean, in the book, there's quite a few chapters, I guess, devoted to your thought process and your prayers. And you went through quite a profound kind of, I would think, repentance, mm-hmm. didn't you, looking over your life?
Yes, I was certainly, that was a revelation for me. You know, it's like I've been through hell and back, and I wanted to make that change. I wanted to change my life. I wanted a second chance. I pray and beg with God to just give me that second chance, and I promise I would live a better life. I promise I would change my ways, and I would do what I have to do, what my mom always asked me to do. And, you know, that was really a conviction in my heart under there, and I meant it genuinely. And, you know, and when God answered my prayer that day, it was truly a blessing for me.
Yeah. I'm speaking to Janelle Guzman-McMillan. She was the last person to be pulled from the World Trade Center alive, and she tells her story in the book Angel in the Rubble. Now, after that long, long wait under the rubble, after all that time in the darkness, you're praying, you're crying out, and then comes the moment when your hand breaks through somehow to the surface and you felt another human hand. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, well, that was a moment, you know, undescribable. I was praying, I was begging, you know, praying and asking God for that second chance and asking God to show me a sign, show me a miracle. And for some reason, my head would feel like it was going to explode, but I was just hanging in there, wanting to give up and still wanted to hang in. And I just put my left hand up, and I felt it like it was, I thought it was in the open air space. And I kept it up, and I said, God, please, please, you know, I can't take this pain no more. I can't. Just show me a sign that you're there. Show me that you're listening. And at that moment, that's when Paul grabbed onto my hand, and he called out my name, and he said, Janelle, I got you. My name is Paul. You're going to be fine. And Paul grabbed my hand, and I held onto his hand, and I felt so calm when he just held my hand. And I said to myself, oh, thank God. Thank God Paul is holding my hand. And I knew I was alive, and I knew I'm going to come out. And that moment was just a joyful, peaceful moment for me, knowing that Paul was just holding on to my hand until the other rescuer finally came and pulled me out.
Yeah, amazing. And in the book, it really brought a tear to my eye just to, imagine how that must have felt in that moment when, you felt this man, Paul, tell you you were going to be okay. Now, it was a little while after that you were rescued. How did the rescuers find you?
While I was holding onto Paul's hand, and, you know, it took a little while, you know, for the other rescue to actually find me. But I heard the noise beneath me or above me, because I was kind of buried under. And then they called out, and they were asking, is anybody up there? Or I think they were talking with each other, saying, oh, I think I saw alive. I think I found one. And that's when they called out, and I answered back, and they asked me, what floor? What is your name? And I told them my name. They asked me, what floor are you on? And I told them what floor I remember being on. And then someone apparently was shining the light, and they said to me, do you see the light? And I said, no, I can't see the light, because even though I can, because my eyes were like shut or blurry. So I called that back out, and I said, do you see my hand? Because I knew Paul was there. I knew my hand was still up in the air. And I asked him, do you see my hand? And I just hear them getting closer and closer, and then finally I heard them very close enough, and they started to remove the rubble and everything, cutting away, and finally they grabbed me, and that's when they strapped me up in the Stoke basket. And it took a while. It took a while for them to actually get to me physically, and that's when Paul let go of my hand when they were almost close.
Wow, it must have been an incredible moment when you actually got out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, my God, I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm going home now to my family. My family is going to be so relieved, you know, so joyful to know that I am alive. And that was my most moment that I remember.
I mean, they must have thought you were dead by then. I mean, you'd been missing all that time.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, they were praying for you to come out alive, but they must have not had much hope.
Oh, yeah. My family definitely had, the way how they know me, you know, being so tiny, you know, so fragile, they know if I was still in that building, there's no way I'm coming out. And my family really lost hope. Roger, obviously, he lost hope. He thought, you know, he knew I was dead, and that's what. So when I knew I was alive, it was just a moment for me to reunite with my family.
And when Roger, you know, did eventually get the call to come to the hospital, he thought that perhaps he was being called to identify your body, didn't he?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that was a moment for him. I mean, when he got that call, I think the call wasn't in detail of what. And, you know, he was scared. His family was there. And I think that's what the hospital told him. Yes, he need to come down. And he really didn't thought that he wanted to do that. And but finally he called his brother while I was in the hospital. He called the nurse and find out in detail what is he coming to see. And that's when he knew that it might be me, you know, that I'm alive.
Yeah, how exciting. And how are you now physically? Because you were crushed, I mean, under this incredible debris. And how have you recovered?
I have recovered amazingly. I mean, knowing that I suffer a crushed leg injury to my right leg, I had 4 major surgeries done on my right leg. My face had with the concrete being pinned against my face, I had a lot of bruises and to my body, but, you know, everything faded away with time. But I've been able to walk after unassisted, I think probably with the year, almost end of the year, I was able to walk again.
That's amazing.
And to wear my shoes, and you know, I do have a permanent limp because of the surgery onto my right leg, but it's very unnoticeable. And, you know, I just thank God that I still have my leg and can still wear my shoes and everything else.
I can't believe that, you know, a whole tower fell on you and you just got out of it with a limp.
Yes. It's amazing, you know. I can't believe it myself sometimes.
Yeah, and when you got out of hospital, then you had a chance to meet with your rescuers and particularly to look for this person, Paul, who was the one that comforted you and held your hand.
Well, I've been looking for Paul. It's been 10 years, and I tried to meet with Paul because I know, you know, I wanted to meet Paul. Because when I got to the hospital, when I was rescued, I told Roger the guy's name. I said, the guy who was holding my hand, who pulled me out, his name is Paul. And Roger wrote the name down. So I wanted to meet Paul. I've been trying to meet Paul ever since. But unfortunately, he never surfaced. And I ended up meeting two other rescuers, which is Brian and Eric, who was there. And I asked them, I said, which one of you was holding my hand? Maybe I get the name wrong or something. And they said, no, you know, no one by that name was ever on the team who was named Paul. And it's just totally a mystery to me that Paul never tried to come forward to meet me, knowing that he saved my life. Mm. So
perhaps someone sent just to help you.
Yeah, I just can't. It's just so amazing to me. And I'm still looking.
Okay. And how do you feel then about, I mean, obviously you lost many co-workers and friends that day. You were the last person found alive, and nobody else got out after you. That's a very bittersweet thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's a very bittersweet thing, you know, knowing that I survived and my other co-workers didn't. You know, I asked myself, why me? You know, I wish my other co-workers was here now for us all to tell the story. And, you know, but I really don't have the total answer for that, why I survived. But I'm forever grateful, and I know that my coworkers are not here today, but hopefully, you know, they're in a better place. Mm. And I just pray and, you know, hope that their family would one day, you know, try and get through it.
Yeah. And how has your life changed then since that day?
My life has changed drastically. I see myself as, you know, I would say like a living proof of God's miracle, God's existence. And I'm just trying to be positive and to let people know how I overcome this adversity in my life and how I believe now in the power of prayer and believe in God so much. It really gave me a deeper and closer relationship to God. And what happened to me on September 11, I take it as my wake-up call. I found a better place, and I have a better life, a better perspective on life, and I thank God for giving me that second chance and allowing me to have a family and to be some hope and inspiration to others who might be going through adversity in their life as well.
Yes, exactly. I mean, not many people have been through what you've been through,
but
many people do go through real struggles in their life. And
exactly.
Your story can be an inspiration to them that even in the most unlikely circumstances, you can come through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for your time today, Janelle. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. It's Janelle Guzman-McMillan. She's the author of Angel in the Rubble. I really recommend you read it and just learn a little bit more about Janelle's journey. But yeah, she was also the last person to be pulled from the World Trade Center alive.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.